things that they did that were like cute and funny, I was just like, ew, PDA, gross. Like, it just, they're not my couple.
That's true. You're very against PDA.
I'm rather private about it. I don't want to make people uncomfy. I save my kisses for home.
You're not against the A, you're against the P of it all.
Lillian, top of the morning to you. How are you today?
Ooh, okay. Top of the morning to you as well. Some new energy we're bringing in. I'm doing great. I have a tiny little anecdote that I saved for you until we were recording.
Oh, boy.
I thought you would find this funny and it would be a great way to like warm up our listeners to our fun day. I know we joke about this every time we do a palate cleanser. Like, I make jokes about how I expect all of stories to be Jane Eyre. I'm reading a book right now where the main love interest has a secret. And I genuinely, for like most of the book, thought it was probably a secret wife.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't.
What was the secret?
It's a very weird book. I'd have to explain like a lot to explain.
It's like,
the secret,
I murdered like 20 people, but it's not as bad as locking a lady up in an attic. So
I was so,
don't worry,
I was
about
so
it.
Sure. It was a crazy wife in the attic. It didn't even occur to me that like the reason I thought that is because of Jane Eyre until I like got the real secret. And I was like, there were no indicators it was a fake wife.
You're just ready for it now. It's like how I think of myself as an optimist, but I also, whenever something big is about to happen, I always imagine the worst possible thing that could happen just to prepare myself for it. Yeah. It's like, what could possibly go wrong? It's like, well, I don't know, maybe like my hair will catch on fire and I'll be horribly scarred and burned forever, but I still have a great personality, so it's going to be okay.
That is actually so true.
Yeah.
If you're horribly scarred and burned forever, I think the first thing I would say to you in the hospital where you're sort of like grieving this loss of your beauty and all of
my
that
hair
stuff,
and my
just
skin.
Like, listen, Piper, I know you're in pain, but you still have a great personality. So you should probably get over this.
Seriously, that's the pep talk that I need. So anyway, we've back to the content of this episode. We had our palates thoroughly cleansed with our love of Little Women last week, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me. And so now we're back to Jane Eyre, and we are doing, this week we are talking about a YouTube series, which was 2012, did you say?
It was 2013, so it started February 28th, 2013, and went through June of 2014. Nice. So it was a year and a half long that they did this.
Yeah. And it was called The Autobiography of Jane Eyre. And it tells the story of Jane Eyre through a sort of video blog format where every episode Jane is sitting down with her camera and kind of walking us through what's going on in her life. And that's how we see the story. It's also the first modern adaptation that we've really gotten. There have been a couple of versions before where it sort of feels like maybe, I mean, like with Sangdeel, we thought maybe that was modern for the time that it came out.
Yeah, that was a contemporary one to the time that it came out, but that was still filmed in the 50s. So it definitely wasn't, even though I was, while we were watching this, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, I had several moments of like really hitting me that 2013 was almost 10 years ago. And I was like, I'm not a fan. I've changed my mind about getting older. I don't mind that I'm almost 30. I mind that things are now further in the past. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. No, there are definitely some things that felt like little time capsules of like, ooh, look at that fashion. I remember wearing that. Ooh.
And I really want to talk about this moment on the internet, but I think we need to start. If we don't start with our recap, our listeners will be set adrift because they're so used to our spectacular 10 out of 10 top quality recaps. Yeah. And I suspect this might be a long one because it's a pretty different interpretation of the story because it's kind of retelling it in this modern way. But that's just my way of giving you an out in case it takes you 45 minutes just to recap this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. I think I'm ready. So whenever you are, let me know. Are you ready?
I've got my timer up. You start. I'll start the timer.
Okay, so the autobiography of Jane Eyre is a story about a girl with a camera and a dream. She starts as a nursing student and decides that she doesn't want to do that anymore. And so she makes a very risky decision to take a job from Craigslist and go meet a stranger in a parking lot. She loses her money and her phone or something like that on the bus. But luckily the car comes and she's taken to this mansion where she's working as a governess. Essentially, she's more like a tutor for Adele, who doesn't need her help because she's way too smart and already has Grace Poole, who's planning everything for her. But Jane is doing her darndest. She almost gets hit by a car while walking around filming herself and meets her future boss. He has a tattoo of Harry Potter, and they talk about that and other nerd things. So they have a nerd crush on each other. He gets into a lot of weird accidents. She like helps heal him after he like gets cut by a vase one night because of a bad dream. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to try to make you love me by making you jealous. So he brings in this woman who he went to college with. Her name is Blanche Ingram. She runs like a marketing campaign. He's the CEO of a big company, by the way, called Thornfield. And he does this whole big thing of like having these parties and forcing Jane to be there and flirting with Blanche in front of her and getting inappropriately drunk, in my opinion. And somehow Jane still falls in love with him. It works. And she films everything and they're okay with it, which is weird also in my opinion. but they go on a trip one day together and it's super flirty. And then he decides he's going to propose and she's like, okay. And so they're going to get married. And then it's a while into the proposal. It's like literally she's like wearing her wedding dress, like right before the wedding, it seems, when Grace Poole comes in and says, hey, actually he's married. And here's this whole situation. He tells her the truth. They film it. Then Jane runs away after promising she won't. She gets assaulted while waiting for a bus. And this guy and his sisters are like, come stay with us. And the guy, it's not St. John. He's Simon, I think is his name. Big jerk, really don't like him. And she bonds with the sisters and he's all weird and doctory. And he's like, let's go to India, and does a really shitty proposal. And Jane's like, no, thanks. Then Grace comes and finds her, says that the company has fallen apart and the wife is dead. Did I mention he's married? that's why she ran away, because surprise. Oh, I think I did mention that. Anyway, Jane goes back to take care of him and Adele. He has a concussion, a broken rib, and a broken foot or leg because he was in a car accident, because famously he can't drive very well. And they take care of each other and she stays and she grows more confident in herself and decides she's going to stop her video blog now because she's been invasive enough. So the end.
It's 30 minutes. You did it. Well, technically it was 2 minutes and 52 seconds.
Nice.
But you covered a lot, because there is a lot in this. Mm-hmm. And I know usually we kind of like jump right into talking about the plot of the thing and characters and stuff. And we're definitely going to do that. But I want to start by talking a little bit about how this is super different from anything else we've really watched. It's a really different, even though you could call this like a TV show, or we talk about this idea of a web series, this was like a very specific thing that lived during a very specific time of the internet. Mm-hmm. And so I want to contextualize that a little bit. And I really want to start by talking about one thing in particular. So I think that while we're going to talk about this, like we talk about everything else, I want to just reiterate that I'm incredibly impressed by the creation of this as art. Like, I think it's a cool thing to have done. And I'm very impressed by everybody who's in it, because while most of these people now are professionals in the industry, they're all like in their 20s and they started a production company to create this. Like, they made this as a thing. And they created this whole world online. They did 101 episodes that was a total of 491 minutes, or 8 hours and 11 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about pacing and all of that stuff. But just to give you an idea of that runtime, Piper, how long do you think like the next longest one is? I'll give you a hint. I have all three of the BBC miniseries times up here.
Oh,
so which one is the next longest of the ones we've watched? And what was the runtime?
I think the next longest one would probably be the 70s one. Yeah.
And that is probably the next longest, but how long do you think it was?
I think it was probably 7 hours and 30 minutes.
It was 4 hours and 35 minutes. So this is over twice as long as any other adaptation that we've watched.
Wow.
Which is part of the reason why, like, I think if you cut this down to a movie length, Mm-hmm. If you like just pulled my favorite moments and restored and like made this as a movie, it might be one of my favorites. There's some really good moments in here. I we're gonna talk about criticisms and all that stuff, but I really want to start up top with that. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of reasons for that. I could technically do that with everyone, but they, the other thing, and then I swear I'll stop talking about this as like, just like fangirling over the fact that they made a thing. Mm-hmm. But most movies, like a small budget movie, if we're talking about like a TV movie mm-hmm. in today's dollars, would have about $65 million budget. Like mm-hmm. that's a normal movie budget to make something that's 3 hours. They made something that was 8 hours. I don't know everything about their funding because they did have a lot of YouTube things, and YouTube monetization wasn't quite as lucrative at the time, but was mm-hmm. something that was true at the time. So they probably made some money from that, but they did an Indiegogo campaign that raised $8,000. Their goal was $5,000. So they made this with very little money and very little experience. And I think they made something incredibly cool that you, like, I read a lot of the comments while going through this. And there was a lot of people who were like, I'm rewatching this during the pandemic. And it's like such a comfort thing to like go back and enjoy this. And like, so the fact that this is something that they created that is still good, like mm-hmm. it's still this like special thing. I'm very, very impressed by that overall.
Yeah, no, it is. It's one thing to sit at your computer, at your microphone and critique something versus put the time and effort to create and the mm-hmm. bravery and confidence to share what you create with others. So if I could recite that entire amazing monologue from Ratatouille, I would, but I don't have it memorized. But just imagine that I'm Anton Ego talking about the role of a critic.
So Piper will get the link to the YouTube clip of the role of a critic and put it in the description. And you guys can just pretend that Piper said that and she made it up from her heart.
Yes, exactly.
But I also think one of the reasons why I'm mentioning this specifically is because all of those reasons are one of the many reasons I'm very excited for next week's episode, mm-hmm. which usually we say it to tease till the end, but I want to specifically mention up top here because we may be referencing this as we go into it. Mm-hmm. So Alison Hall was one of the co-creators of this. She was the lead actress. She is our Jane. And she is going to be a guest on the podcast next week. So yeah. We are going to be interviewing her and chatting about all of the things they did for production and all of that stuff. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to make that note up top, is I'm genuinely like super excited to talk to her about all of that stuff. And then obviously some choices they made and her experience with it and what she's up to now and all that good stuff.
All right. So Lillian, any kind of like first gut reactions to this?
Okay. My gut reactions, I have genuine criticisms. I think there's some pacing things that I didn't love. There's some moments that I thought it was not how I necessarily would have interpreted it. But all in all, I really liked this.
Nice.
I think that the acting was surprisingly good. I think one of the biggest things that I noticed up top, and it's actually something that you and I messaged each other about when we very first started listening to this, because we watched 8.5 hours of content for this, guys. And one of the things that we message each other is like, this is a little bit awkward. And I think some of that awkwardness is them settling into these characters, because you mm-hmm. see, like, as they get a few episodes in, you start to see them be a little bit more comfortable. But mm-hmm. something that I was realizing as we were watching it is Jane Eyre is an inherently awkward story. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of awkwardness in the story. And I think similar to, we talk about the idea of like how they play the tone of Rochester and how they play the tone of Jane, and how much of Jane Eyre when you read the book is up to interpretation, which is part of the reason why there's so many different adaptations of this. Mm-hmm. I think they leaned into the awkwardness in a way that they did a good job, because I felt uncomfortable watching.
Yeah, it struck me hard when I first started watching, because it's just this young woman like recording, deciding that she's going to record her life and share it with the internet, which most of us today have social media and we share a lot of elements of our lives. I mean, some people are more private than others, but I personally don't typically consume any kind of vlogger content. I mm-hmm. don't actively go out and want to see what someone is doing every single day and how their life is progressing. So because that was an unusual like format for me, that is where some of the awkwardness came from, of someone sitting mm-hmm. down and being like, hi, I'm Jane Eyre. I've never done this before. Maybe I should put on this hat and that'll make me more comfortable and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, sweet pea, just stop recording right now. But you know, it's like, there is that interesting level to it of, I liked how often people, she'd be recording and someone would come in and they would address, like, they're like, oh, the camera's on. And I thought it was a good choice that Jane is usually the one who's like, I can turn it off. And everyone's like, no, it's fine. Cause they have to for the structure to like keep the story going. Cause it can't all just be Jane recapping things to us. We want to see things happen live. But it was, I liked that she referred to it as kind of like a journal and like the different explanations they gave of like, well, this is like how I feel more comfortable sometimes, just being able to talk through things. But yeah, there was definitely that awkwardness, though I did appreciate how they attempted to kind of reduce that with these kind of calling it forward things.
I really loved too, it's hard to tell how much of it was these people creating this, like as writers, as actors, as producers, as editors, like, obviously, when you're doing something for a year and a half, you're going to get better and better at telling that story. You're going to get better and better at that thing. If you don't believe me, go listen to the first episodes of this podcast and then come back and listen to this one. And you can see the quality that you can increase in 6 months. So definitely something I can understand and relate to. But I also think there's an incredible character arc for Jane as well. Yeah. And that would probably be, if I was going to pick one thing that I think this has done better than arguably any other adaptation, is Jane's character is really the center of this story. Yeah. And some of that is the inherent nature of the format that they're choosing, because it's Jane's vlog, it's Jane's choice, it's all this stuff. There's some other production reasons why the ending in particular was so centered on Jane. But I really liked that as a different way of talking about Jane Eyre, is having, because the book is that way, right? Like, if the book is completely from her perspective, it's all her. And she has the luxury of being able to go back and forth between narrative and action and conversation and like all of that stuff, because she's not trying to justify why they live in a reality where she's doing vlogs, right? Like, they made some, that's one of the things that I like noted down. We've talked about, I think I talked in the Little Women episode about how my notes document for that was really long. This one is 18 pages. I took notes.
I took zero notes during this one because I was, it was too overwhelming of a prospect. So I'm like, I'm just going to talk about the things that I remember.
which I think we were literally talking before we recorded about how our different approaches to this. And I think that really hits the nail on the head, Piper. Zero notes, Lily. 18 pages of notes.
Amazing.
But I think, and speaking of the character of Jane and how well it's served, I think it's incredible to A, watch as Allison kind of starts to grow into the character of Jane and feel more, like you can watch her as an actress. The first couple of episodes, she's good, but she is uncomfortable. And some of that is the character and some of that is her. And you kind of watch her settle into that and really embody this character of Jane. And as you get further into these episodes, so much of this show is her. There's a lot of phone calls that happen that is her being on a phone call. She is, no one's on the other line there. She's, but it feels so real. And some of the awkwardness that you feel kind of in later episodes, once you get past those first few, is because she is playing into that. And that is her acting. That is an intentional choice to make you feel that way. Yeah. There are moments where I felt like crying. There are moments that I was genuinely afraid because I'm easily scared.
I remember there were certain moments, like especially the initial being lost at the bus stop, which felt very Blair Witch. But then also when there's the thunderstorm and it's not Bertha in this one. What do they call her?
Beth.
They call her Beth.
They call her M when they're keeping her identity secret.
Yeah. There's a scene where Jane is alone in the house. She's now engaged to Rochester and she falls asleep during while making one of her videos. There's a storm, so the power goes out and the lightning is flashing and there's a candle lit. And that was a moment where I was like, oh, Lillian hates this episode. But I was also screaming at the TV. I was like, you guys couldn't get night vision? This is should be Paranormal Activity, where it's like a time thing and it's like going fast and Bertha's just standing there shaking next to her bed, like watching.
It's also a question of like, why would Jane have had that, right? Like there's so many things like that where I'm like, well, why wouldn't you do it this way? And I'm like, well, because why would you do that? Like it's similar to a lot of what we watch. And I actually really liked this about it, but a lot of what we watch is people like just their torsos.
Yeah.
Because Jane always has it set up for her to sit at a camera. And then she stands up to talk to somebody and all you see is their torso and you hear, like, that's how almost every character is introduced, mm-hmm. is you see their torso as they talk to Jane. And it is, that's an inherently awkward thing in a format, but also it's inherently awkward to accidentally be filmed for someone's vlog. And yeah. there's a whole plot line where Rochester finds out about her vlog, mm-hmm. and like people, whether they know about it or not. And I do want to talk up specifically about the format and the idea of vlogs, and then also the idea of these like online communities and like living in the reality of this is Jane Eyre and her life online a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To kind of start with that, I'm glad that there was that episode. And I think the title of it is I Think I'm Fired, when she's mm-hmm. talking with him and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I've been filming you in your house. And I'm glad they needed that, in my opinion, because there were so many things where before that episode happened, I'm like, dude, this is such an invasion of privacy.
I know.
If I hired someone to watch over my kids and then I found out they were filming things in my home and then like uh-huh. putting them online, I'd be like, mm-mm, get out of here. I don't care if I'm in love with you. I have a sick wife upstairs.
Like, I have a lot of secrets in this house.
No, like seriously, with how many secrets this guy has, you should not have someone filming and then putting it online. But well, so I'm
and I think
glad
it's
they
classic,
addressed that at least.
Classic Rochester to be like, well, Jane's doing it, so it's totally fine.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, there are so many things like that. But yeah, go ahead with your structure comments.
So this is directly inspired by a story. I don't know if you ever watched the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. I did not.
No.
But the Lizzie Bennet Diaries were somewhat more popular than this. They were the idea of retelling Pride and Prejudice in the same format. So they were inspired by that idea. There's a lot less awkwardness in that because there's a lot less awkwardness in Pride and Prejudice than there is in Jane Eyre. Mm-hmm. It also had a lot more backing, like just financially from other projects and the people involved. Like I believe Hank Green was actually involved in creating that. And that was like, it was just a peak level of the internet. That one of the things that I first looked up during this, because it feels like Tumblr to me, like the whole vibe of this, like feels like Tumblr.
It's very Tumblr.
Which
yes.
for our listeners who don't know the vibe of the early 2010s Tumblr. Can you explain the vibe? Because I don't know if you were on Tumblr. I was never on Tumblr.
I was. I just made a very scared face.
You
I don't know
have
if
to
I'm
tell
a good
us about
person.
Your Tumblr. You don't have to tell us about
no,
your Tumblr.
No, I won't tell you about my Tumblr. So I'm not a good person to talk about it because I actually have very negative feelings about that website. I think I've only ever known it as a community for extreme fan bases. And I've mostly only seen the toxic side of that on Tumblr, people gatekeeping different like fandoms. And it always felt like a competition to be like, I have all the fan art, I know everything. And it's like, ugh, it was a little bit much for me. So I left that website after a few years of being on it. So
yes.
I don't think I'm the best to talk
what
about.
What years were you on Tumblr?
I was on Tumblr, I think like 2012, 2013, like right okay. when this was like coming out. And yeah, it wasn't my thing.
I think Tumblr is one of the examples of the internet creating kind of these like more and more extreme bubbles. And I think the way from looking at this and looking at comments and the other spaces that this show was kind of consumed on the internet, it feels a lot more like the way that our audience interacts. Like mm-hmm. it's a very positive comment section, which is not standard for YouTube. It's a lot of like building off of each other's ideas and explaining things to people and like commenting on like why they like or didn't like some of the interpretations of the story. Specifically, I want to talk a lot about Beth Bertha decisions, but they created a whole reality that they live in. So a lot of these characters refer to their Twitters. They have Twitters. Those still exist out there. And you can go look at the tweets that these characters were sending out. Mm-hmm. And they do Q&As on their channel that live within the reality of Jane Eyre. So they're not question and answers with the actors. They do have a separate production channel that you can watch that on if you're curious. They've got like bloopers and things. It's very cute. But they live in the reality. Like she does a Q&A with Adele where Adele talks about all of this stuff. And they have all of these other channels where like Jane had a Tumblr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Tumblr era of the internet was Tumblr was like peak, I think, popular and potentially toxic. So I don't think this had kind of that toxic community, mm-hmm. but this was the space that it was living in, of this idea of like, you love something so much.
Yes.
That there's a lot of intensity about it. And mm-hmm. I think you can see that in the creation of this, you can see that intensity.
Yeah.
I also, another thing around this era that I want to talk about that wouldn't have occurred to me, except now it's old stuff and really highlighted for me things I need to be careful about wearing, is the fashion.
Yeah. The fashion. Oh my gosh. The look that really killed me is when she's staying with Simon and his sisters mm-hmm. and the girl who's into dance. At one point,
Mary.
Yeah, she took off this jacket after coming home, and she had a neon pink tank top underneath a mesh, no, like a black lace shirt, and it was off one shoulder. And I think she had black and white striped pants. And I saw that and I was like, oh no.
Here's the
it's
thing.
It's middle school me.
And this, I think high school, college, middle school, we would have tried, but it was so, there was a particular, like her haircut too. Yeah. Like she had this somewhat toned down version of that, like
Scene kid haircut. Yes, exactly. Like that actress when she was younger definitely had like the tiger stripes.
This was the like you're transitioning from a scene kid haircut to a normal adult haircut.
Yes.
But that bob, the like side bob, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what my hair looked like. I didn't tease it up with the like scene kid style, but that was my hair in 2013. Yeah. So the other thing that I noted down is I was watching this, and like per always, I'm like noting down fashion choices. I'm noting down generally bonnets. I wrote, mm-hmm. you know, what would have, instead of bonnet watch, this is scarf watch, baby.
There you go. Although she did have
so
that,
many scarves.
That one like little knitted hat with a face on it at the beginning. So that's her one bonnet.
Yes. But really it was because I wore a lot of scarves mm-hmm. and I wore them too long. I transitioned away from fashion scarves, that's not to say you can't wear scarves in a fashionable way now, but it was summertime scarves. For those of you who maybe weren't 22 in this era, summertime scarves, you wore like a tank top, like a classic, lots of people in this wore like an extra long tank top that's like just a little too short to be a skirt. And mm-hmm. then you wear like leggings underneath and how much, or jeans, but depending on this, if it's the summer, it's like a netty sort of legging situation. And then you're wearing a scarf and you're wearing like four different tank tops for no reason that no one can understand.
I at least thought that if we're talking about, you know, earlier Jane's evolution of becoming more confident, I thought her fashion improved throughout the mm-hmm. series as well. Like her hairstyle got more complicated and I was like, oh, that's pretty. Like you look really good here. But one thing I really need to address, if I may change topics mm-hmm. real quick.
Yes.
So this was my big take from this whole thing. I thought this story in a modern setting was way creepier than how I typically think of it in a old-timey setting.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, like, in an old-timey setting, partially we have this whole mindset where we're like, oh, things were different back then. Like, people got married younger and age gaps, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And there's also this whole, like, social power difference, as much as we don't want that to be true. But, like, so here in today's setting, with so many of the things that mm-hmm. Rochester did, it felt really creepy to me. And maybe I'm like, there's a escapism of a older time setting where I can forgive certain things. I'm like, well, it's not real. Like this is a gothic fantasy, but in a modern day setting, there were so many things that Rochester did that ooked me out. So that was
I actually want to talk about those because I think there's some things that they did to reinterpret them to a modern day that I was like, oh, I really like how you did that. Mm-hmm. Like making their Simon St. John character a doctor. Mm-hmm. That was perfect transition for that character because he couldn't be a missionary. He couldn't be going to India for that reason, but going to India.
Unless he was a Mormon.
With generic brand Doctors Without Borders, who lets you go young and inexperienced and just drops you in the middle of nowhere. I was like, oh no, that's fine. Really well interpreted there. I want to really unpack what they did with Bertha, but I want to talk about Rochester.
We need to talk about Rochester.
Because his behavior is hard to justify. It's hard enough to justify when you're talking about 1847. It gets really hard when you're talking 2013. So what are your biggest ooks? Because I have some moments that I really thought were romantic. So let's start with ooks and then get out of it with romance.
Nice. I like the structure. So I want to first say that Rochester is supposed to be 30 in this and Jane is supposed to be 22. Mm-hmm. So they have a 8-year difference. He just came across as really immature to me. And that's mm-hmm. something I think that is so tricky about age gap relationships in the real world is that typically if there's a big enough difference in age, and 8 years isn't that bad, but it comes across feeling as if the older person is super immature in comparison to the younger person, at least a lot of the time. And that's how I felt with him. And I know that they were trying to kind of have it be with his whole backstory that he had inherited this big corporation at a young age. And he mm-hmm. Said he didn't even finish college. So he's just like a party boy who doesn't know how to run a company. So he is this immature child. But that was not attractive to me. And so it was stuff like that that I didn't like. He sat really close, which again, we've talked with other versions, the 50s one, the TV made for a TV movie, where he's invading her space. And you mentioned that because of the framing, they only have such a dimension possibility. Because in this, there are many scenes where Jane is doing her vlog in her bedroom and then he comes in and talks to her and he would sit down right next to her and it's so close. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, that's your employee. Ooh, you're in her bedroom right now. They spent so many scenes in her bedroom. And I was like, you should not be there. There needs to be safe spaces.
Yeah.
And so there's stuff like that.
It's harder watching her boss. Cause they do. I think it's that double-edged sword of I talked a lot about the idea of the realness of this world and how they really sat in that space of this being a real world and it feeling like that as you're mm-hmm. watching it. Great. That's hard to do. That's impressive to do. But in doing that, mm-hmm. it feels like your 30-year-old boss is hitting on his 22-year-old nanny. And it's mm-hmm. gross.
And she's putting it out on the internet for everyone to see. And I have people oh my God, get out.
Please stop. I'm dying for you to stop doing this. And I think it is and if we're totally honest, it's gross when Rochester does it with a 19-year-old and he's almost 40. It's true. Gross then too. So yes. It's really critical that they brought the age gap closer together. And I think they justify his story in a way that I really enjoyed, but I agreed there was too many moments that I was like, dude, I agree with you. I wouldn't be attracted to it. But part of that is because you and I are closer to Rochester's age than Jane's age in this. Mm-hmm. And there is a thing with trauma. And I am, despite everyone's beliefs, not a trained therapist. And by everyone, I do mean me. but there is a thing that I know just enough about to be dangerous, where if you have a traumatic thing happen, or I know particularly with addiction, this is very mm-hmm. true, but I know that there's a lot of crossover with addiction or with trauma in that. So if we're talking about what happens with him kind of having his whole family die and then his wife have this mental breakdown and this addiction issue and suddenly becoming a father and suddenly being in charge of this company. If we talk about that experience as trauma, mm-hmm. you freeze at the age that that trauma starts.
Yeah.
And you don't start maturing again until you start healing that trauma. Mm-hmm. And a true fact about Rochester in both the original and in this, is he is not healing from that trauma. He's ignoring it. He's hiding it. He's avoiding it. He's doing all of these other things. Yeah. So I agree with you that mm-hmm. he feels more like a 25-year-old or a 22-year-old even than mm-hmm. he feels like a 30-year-old man in this. And I'm not attracted to that.
Yes, same.
Until some of the cuter moments later.
There were,
when it first gets introduced, genuinely the first 10 episodes of this, I was like, I don't like it. It's yucky and it's tough, but it's well done, but it's yucky.
Yes. No, I agree. There's a couple of funny things that I have to point out. This part blew my mind and I need an explanation. So I'm definitely going to ask her about this when she's on the show, if I remember. When Jane is out filming and talking to herself and walking in the middle of the road, he comes speeding around the corner in his car, which I was like, there's no way they're going to do it in a car. Like, he would hit her and she would die. And I'm like, it's got to be a motorcycle because a bicycle is stupid and he can't be riding a horse. That's too posh and weird. So the fact that when she like suddenly screams, there's a screeching sound, the camera like drops on the ground, and then you see him step out of his car and he's yelling at her and he like is limping for whatever reason. And she like brings him over to the side of the road and like tries to like help and look at his leg. I'm like, how the hell did you hurt your leg or your ankle? What, did you slam on the brakes so hard that you then twisted it? What's wrong with you? Learn to drive. But like, so that was just something that bothered me. But they had to have that scene. It would have been better with a motorcycle, but maybe they couldn't afford one, or he doesn't know how to drive it. I don't know. So I had to mention that. Him, this is like less of a, like, I'm just ranting about it and like more of a plot point thing. He, another ook moment was like when they're doing that corporate video for the party. Oof, and he's like, it was so really
rough.
And he gets pretty drunk and he like dresses up as a clown and he's going around and like reading people's palms and stuff. That was cringy and so uncomfy. And what was the worst part of that moment for me is that at one point, Grace comes in to try and like get the CEO of this company away from the camera so people can't see how drunk and disorderly he is. And he like leans in as if he's like going to give her a kiss a couple of times. I'm like, oh no. But they do address that narratively like later mm-hmm. in the story, which I appreciated. Grace, yeah. At one point when she comes to get Jane, she tells her, she's like, he doesn't drink anymore. Like, he gave that up. Mm-hmm. He's like doing all better and all these things. But like, yeah, so those moments I was all like, ooh, oh no.
and another, I when we talk about Bertha, I want to unpack that whole scene because they do reference even the way that he treated Blanche was like unacceptable in that moment. Mm-hmm. And Jane calls him out for it later, which I enjoyed.
Yes.
That is something we've never seen, is Jane calling out Rochester for the way he treats Blanche, which mm-hmm. was very honest and real, and I really, really liked. So I think that it's hard to watch because it feels real.
Yes.
But I think that it's actually, I really liked how it fit into the storytelling. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been to a corporate event where people were drinking too much.
Thankfully, no, because I feel like that's incredibly inappropriate.
I've been to corporate events, whether it's happy hours, there was a Christmas party in particular that I think of, no lines were crossed. Nobody was filming, but if they were filming, they would have caught a lot of people behaving in a way that I would find unprofessional. So yeah. I have one time when I was a brand new little corporate baby and I was 22 and I went to a work happy hour. Instead of having one drink, I had two drinks and I hadn't eaten and I was a little tipsy. And I didn't do anything embarrassing. I just stayed really quiet because I knew I was tipsy. Mm-hmm. But I realized in that moment that it was not a feeling I ever wanted to repeat.
Yeah.
I felt out of control and tipsy in a work situation. Mm-hmm. So I since then have had a rule that when I go to work things, I have at most one drink.
Nice. Yeah.
Now that has led to me seeing a lot of people, because I've worked at a lot of different companies across corporate America, especially in startup land. Small business startup land loves to give their employees a lot of alcohol and talk about how we're a family. and that leads to a lot of that vibe. Mm-hmm. So that party, reminiscent of parties I have been to, where the CEO gets drunk and says things that you're like, why are you touching me?
Yeah.
I'm 25, you're 60 and you're touching me. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're drunk and you don't mean anything by it, mm-hmm. but it is uncomfortable for me.
Yeah. Not good.
And HR is also here and drunk. Yay.
Yay. No one's helping.
you have to, 22-year-olds have to figure out for themselves how to have their boss be appropriate. So the thing that I liked about that was again, the reality, Warren, a character that is brand new and special for this, who's supposed to be doing like the video thing for the company, is being a dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he sucks. Also a guy I've worked with before.
Oh my gosh.
and I think the fact that he was the only one who thought what Rochester was doing was okay. What I loved about that and the way that that video plays, is everybody's uncomfortable. Like they start by being like, oh, the CEO is going to do something fun. And Grace is like really worried about it because she doesn't know what the plan is. And Warren and Rochester plan together and that can only be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else is uncomfortable about it. And they think it's not okay, which to be fair is also what everyone's reaction should be to the gypsy scene in Jane Eyre.
Yes, exactly. So actually that is a great like translation of that, of how do we do a man dressing in drag and reading fortunes. Yeah. He's just drunk at a corporate party and he dresses up as a clown instead. It's like, oh my. Yeah. Again, so there's so many things about this where we have to forgive like the medium, because this was framed, that video, that episode was framed as they're like something released by the corporation. I'm like, they would never put that online. They would
there's
never.
There's no way that makes it through the marketing department.
Unless the, unless Warren uploaded it while he was drunk that night.
Warren seems like, because there are guys I've worked with, again, like the guys who are like that watch things like that and think it's fun and funny. Like I literally, part of my job, I'm sorry to talk about this and be real about things, but part of my job is social media trainings. Mm-hmm. And exactly that is something that I have to tell grown adults not to post on the internet. I'm like, do not go on your LinkedIn and post a picture of you drunk, clearly drunk at happy hours. I have fake stock images of people who are notably drunk. I have to show people, adults, a picture of like, here's you holding a glass of wine in a very professional way with your coworkers.
Oh my God.
Here's a picture of you taking shots drunk with some of like your face all red. One is okay to post on the internet, although I wouldn't. I don't ever post anything with alcohol in it. And one is not. Can you see the difference? You grown adults.
Thank God for you, Lillian. If they didn't have you, where would they be?
They would be
drunk online.
Thornfield Industries, and they would fall apart.
There you go. All the investors would withdraw, as what happened to these people. So my last little thing I want to say before we jump into romantic things they did well is, so again, along these lines of Jane continues to post these videos, when Jane runs away and then she's posting the videos still, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, Rochester is totally stalking you. Like he's definitely subscribed to this channel. I'm sure like he'd be flooding the comments section, which by the way, there was that line where he says that Adele taught him how to scroll through comments on YouTube. And I'm like, there's no way you don't know how to scroll
he's
on a 30, web page.
He's old, babe.
He's 30. He's not that old. And he's 30 in 2013. So no, he's not old. That's not an excuse. But I'm like, no, he would be stalking the fuck out of that web series. And also if he wanted her bad enough, which he totally did, by her being like, oh, I'm here with this guy who's a doctor, he'd be like, boom, I'm at your door. I found you. Come back to me. Like, I'm like, oh no.
I first of all think, I want to talk about that specifically, but I think she's making them knowing he's watching. Like there's a lot of references to the idea of like, she says, I miss you to the camera with a lot of intensity a few times. I think she's doing it as a bridge to stay connected to him. Second of all, I think that Rochester, unlike some people that I know, respects boundaries. And he didn't call her or text her or reach out to her. Like he doesn't in the beginning, but like her explicit, when she explicitly says to him, do not contact me, do not reach out to me, I don't think he was flooding her contact section. I do think he was watching the videos over and over and over again by himself in his room at night.
Totally. And I was thinking, like, I kept thinking about that in these videos because I'm like, he's definitely like watching all of these. And so like in the video where Simon like does that shitty proposal, that's what would have gotten Rochester like to go kick down the door and be like, I'm going to murder that little doctor. How dare he?
That little doctor was so rude to you and I'm going to kill him about it. But his life was falling apart at this point.
That's true.
We have
too
to
busy
live
with
in the
sadness.
Reality they're living in.
Oh my gosh. Uh-oh. Okay. Tell me about romance, Lillian.
Okay, there's a series of episodes that I would die for. Mm-hmm. I have loved them. Mm-hmm. First of all, what a cutie. So I think the first episode that I felt this way, I believe it was episode like 24, but it was, he kidnaps her and they go, they're supposed to go grocery shopping and they go to the park and stuff. Did you not enjoy that? Because I thought it was so cute. I really liked it.
I can see the charm in it, but he's just so awkward to me and I'm not attracted to him. So all the little things that they did that were like cute and funny, I was just like, ew, PDA, gross. Like it just, they're not my
That's
couple.
That's true. You're very against PDA.
I'm rather private about it. I don't want to make people uncomfy. I save my kisses for home.
You're not against the A, you're against the P of it all. Okay, here's the thing, and you can cut this out if you want to. Of all of the Rochesters that we've watched, mm-hmm. all of them, this one looks like a particular human person that I know more than any of the other ones.
Oh no, you thought he looked like Sam?
He looks more like Sam than anybody else.
Cheese looks more like mustard than any other thing because they're both yellow. That doesn't mean you look at this guy and he's Sam.
That's a great point that I didn't think of.
Cheese to mustard ratio.
He's definitely the mustard to Sam's cheese. I'll gush about the moments that I thought were really cute. Cool. Did you find any of the Rochester Jane stuff cute?
I'm trying to think.
It's rough if you have to think about it this long.
Nothing stood out to me as like that's sweet. I think the moment that I kind of liked him best was maybe when he was like confessing everything to her and telling the truth. And so that was, he was more endearing to me in that moment. But I don't know. He just wasn't my cup of tea, which is
a
good reference
to make. Yes. Oof. Her obsession with tea. I get it. They loved it.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest things that I noted down about this, and I really genuinely think that this would be helpful for anyone considering watching this, do not binge this show. Mm-hmm. Don't binge it. It was designed to be watched once a week. Mm-hmm. It was like, clearly they like led up to certain moments. Like that's the way this was meant to be consumed. Do not binge it.
No,
it's not the most fun time to sit down and watch this. And I tried watching it like more spaced out, but then at some point your life gets busy and you're like, well, I have weeks to watch this. And suddenly you have 3 days and you've still got 7 hours left.
The wages scene, that was charming. But I couldn't help get angry because it's a modern day setting. And I'm like, lady, you haven't been asking for your bi-weekly paycheck. Like when she said that, I was like, what? Like, yes, you get free room and board and they're giving you food and stuff, but you haven't been paid yet. That's not okay. Look out for yourself.
I completely agree. I also feel the very same way. I want to get Jane out of there. And I want to be like, sweetheart, you should not let your boss flirt with you like that. And you have to get paid at least every other week. And honestly, as a nanny, I always got paid weekly, but I did have to ask. Like you have to, like I was a nanny for years and you have to remind those people that they owe you money. Unless it's like a babysitting thing where you're doing it once a day, like I would always have to be like, hey, remember how you owe me an envelope full of cash? That's today.
I mean, maybe you could brush it off as like this whole thing that from day one, Grace was supposed to get her to sign this like confidentiality agreement, which I don't know why that just didn't happen. But then maybe
Rochester said he was going to do it and then he didn't because he fell in love with her.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe mixed up in the confidentiality agreement was also her like W-2 form, which she never filled out. So like taxes.
And then
the speaking of taxes.
Again, like great way of interpreting the story, parallels the story. But she takes her check and she goes, this is four times what it's supposed to be, which is the whole like shtick that they have in the book. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much nannies like that make like 70 grand a year? So if she had been working there for 6 months and it was four times what it was supposed to be, it's like $100,000 check.
Yeah. Which again, which, like, I think it's whole thing where this guy doesn't understand how wealthy he is. Cause they did do the whole thing where he's like flooding her with gifts and it makes her really uncomfy. The tiara was like way too much. Don't buy a girl a tiara. I mean, I know a few girls who would love to receive one, but not Jane.
And I also think that that's one of those moments where you take an idea that in the movies is 2 minutes and in the book is sort of just like essentially like alluded to, you're in Jane's head. So you know that it's not that uncomfy. And then you make it 3 episodes of YouTube videos where it's like kind of speckled in there, but we're watching 15 minutes of this woman saying, please stop getting me gifts. And he goes, fine, I will only get you a $10,000 teacup.
Yeah. Which again, very uncomfortable. There's like this power imbalance, which is always there in the original stuff, but it just feels different for some reason.
I think it's because this feels real.
Well, yes, exactly. And I think it's because of a modern woman. I expect her to, I mean, she does stand up for herself. She puts her foot down and says, no, this is not okay. But I guess I expect him to also understand that he can't treat her like a little doll that he can dress up and things like that. Cause I'm like, this is 2013. so it's, I don't know, be aware human being who respects women.
So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the moments that I thought were really cute. Mm-hmm. And then I want to talk about the scene that I think explains all of the things that we're calling out here as issues. And I also genuinely think is the best episode of this entire series, which is, I believe it's called The Truth. The one right before it is called The Lie, which I thought was great. Mm-hmm. And you can see them, they spent a lot of this story, like laying the seeds for that and building stuff out. I referred to the wages section as peak cuteness, but I really enjoyed so many of their little moments together. I thought that the wages scene was really cute. I thought that the moments when they went on a walk together was really cute. I just really liked my favorite parts of this show were the moments when they were together. Now, I do happen to know that the actor who played Rochester had to go, so they could not flush out that more on the back end, and they didn't have any more time with him to be able to do any more stuff with him. Mm-hmm. So I have seen in some of the other, because I'm a crazy person, I've read other reviews of it. That is like actually a common thing. And like in the comment section, it's something that people bring up as well. But I think the chemistry that those two actors have together was really, really good. The Q&A that they do together is cute. Mm-hmm. You can see her getting like flustered and him like being really into her and her not really like registering that. And even the gift thing, like you can tell that he knows he should be telling her the truth. Mm-hmm. He's overcompensating with these gifts.
Yeah.
And instead of like respecting the boundary and understanding that and like all of these things, they're leading up to the fact that these people have to break up because the reason can't just be his wife. Mm-hmm. Like that has always been the issue that I've had with how are you going to reinterpret Jane Eyre in a modern setting? He can get divorced.
Right.
He does not have to be married to her. Now there's some ways that I would potentially interpret that slightly differently, but they needed a reason why they had to break up, that she had to leave. Mm-hmm. That wasn't just his wife. Yeah. It was the culmination of all these things that are tied to his wife, but it's not just that. And I think that all these criticisms that you have are the criticisms that ultimately Jane brings up in the episode.
Exactly. Which let's talk about that. Because first of all, I liked the decision that instead of their wedding getting interrupted, that it's Grace Poole who tells Jane the truth. Mm-hmm. Grace waited a while. I feel like once they got engaged, she should have instantly pulled Jane aside and been like, woman upstairs, wife, get out.
Got to imagine that she's talking to Rochester that way behind the back. Because, and they weren't going to legally get married. They were going to do like a commitment ceremony.
Right. Which again, which Jane kind of talks through of these ideas of like, maybe I should have seen that as a sign. Like you didn't actually want to legally marry me, but yeah. So let's talk about is it The Lie or the
Lie is the episode where she finds out. So she's like, she's making all these choices about the wedding. She's got like a bed covered in wedding stuff, which is going to be you a year from now, making all of these decisions about her wedding day. But she's decided on her dress and like through the process of getting all of this stuff, she has put her wedding dress on and Grace comes in, sees her in the dress and like, you can just watch that beat. First of all, great. I love the way they did the character of Grace Poole. She's sort of an amalgamation of Mrs. Fairfax and Grace Poole. And she is an excellent actress and I think a really well done character. But she comes in and you can watch her go, yep, I'm done with it now. Come with me. We're going to go talk. We're not going to talk on camera. We're going to go have this conversation. And Jane is like, what is this about? And like, gets kind of nervous and is like, should I go talk to Rochester? And Grace is like, nope, it's just a paperwork thing.
I liked how they handled that.
And then we see Jane go into her bedroom and she's crying. And then in the next episode, it starts with Rochester outside the door, trying to talk to her and clearly expressing worry because she's been in there very quiet for a while, which would be scary. Who's someone you have to worry about harming themselves or some level of addiction or something like that. Mm-hmm. I have experience of people that I'm close with having things like that, where if you don't, there's people in my life, if I don't hear from them for months, I'm sure they're fine. Mm-hmm. And there's other people where for moments in time, if I didn't hear from them for 12 hours, I thought they might be dead.
Yeah.
So if you have that kind of trauma, it makes sense that he is sitting outside of her door, begging her to just say something to prove that she's in there and she is okay.
Yeah. No, that was well done. So she lets him in, they sit down, and he starts explaining everything, which the big narrative change in this is that he fell in love with Beth. That's what they're calling her in this?
They call her M in the episode, but at the end we find out her name is Beth because he knows that they're still being recorded and he can't say her name because it's not his story to tell.
Mm-hmm. So he tells Jane that when they were like young and in college, they fell in love. And then she got pregnant and they were both excited about that. But if I'm remembering correctly, her family like made them get married because they didn't want them to have a child out of wedlock because her family also had a lot of money and was like on the board of investors of his family's company. So they're all like connected in this weird way. So that's kind of where the forced marriage situation comes in. Though in this scenario, it's very clear that he was super duper in love with her and he was excited to have Adele as his daughter and all this stuff. And then I think he's telling about how they used to be like so wild and like party lifestyle. And she got like hooked on all these drugs and things. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And essentially, instead of Bertha being insane, it's more that his wife, Beth, has like a severe addiction problem. And it got so bad that he like didn't know her anymore. Like she became someone else essentially. And that's when he kind of like, he still loves her, but he's not in love with her anymore. And I think their explanation of why he can't get a divorce is because this whole like her family's money, like there's this the whole confidentiality thing that the family made them sign. It was something about that, which
and,
I guess I didn't really
Something that I would have, I don't think they explicitly said this, but something that like I either wish they had said or sort of like interpreted from this is there's these layers of like his family and her family are very controlling. And within the time period of her being pregnant and them getting married, his brother dies and then his father kills himself about it. And so it's this very rough situation that is happening there. So he's not helping her. So they go from like being in love and going to do this together to her family makes them get married, or his family makes them get married. Somebody's family makes them get married. Neither family is helpful or supportive. They're all worried about the look of it and how this looks and their reputation. And so he's taking over this struggling company after going through this terrible loss and having to leave school and having this whole, his whole life kind of turned upside down. And meanwhile, he misses the birth of their child. She then goes into postpartum depression. And I think we've all seen people in college who do things that if somebody now was doing that, we'd be like, you have a problem. And some people just go, whoops, that was me in college. What a crazy time. And other people get out of college and are like, this is how I'm going to live my life now. And I think being 22, feeling very alone, being in this postpartum depression, really struggling with that, not having a support system, your husband is off dealing with this other stuff and ignoring you, she turns to addiction. What an incredible interpretation of the character of Bertha. I really loved that. And I think the layer that I sort of incepted from this or kind of added to it or interpreted from it, I don't think they explicitly say this. So her family gets her out of there and says, she has a problem. We're blaming this man for her problem, which classic families who don't actually care about you and care about how you look is to be like, this one person is responsible for your problems. You don't need any help. You're not going to get actual therapy. We're just going to get you away from this one guy. So she leaves and goes back with her parents. They get her no help. They just get her her own apartment and kind of go, good luck, babe. And he finds her in a shelter. Really hooked on drugs. That is how she is getting through this. She's not getting any help. So he and her brother, Mason, pull her out of there, and Grace helps them set up this whole wing of the house where they can get nurses and all this stuff and keep it quiet. Cause that's the part, the secret of it, him having a secret wife is all her family's NDA stuff. And so he's trying to take care of her. Now, the thing that I interpreted from it is the reason they couldn't get divorced was because her parents didn't want her there. So he only had any level of control over her life to be able to get her the help so that her and her brother could get her the help. because he had the stronger claim as her husband. So right. even though he didn't love her and didn't want to be married to her, mm-hmm. he still cared about her as the mother of his child and as this person that he used to love.
Yeah.
And even though you can lose people to addiction, even when they get sober, because it can do permanent damage to them. Mm-hmm. He still wants to take care of her and wants and thinks that and feels a lot of guilt and shame and all of the things that are classic Rochester, yeah. All tied to this. And I think it's I genuinely didn't know how you could take the character of Bertha and make it justifiable that he'd do this in a modern time.
Yeah.
Nailed it with that.
I agree. No, that was done very well. And it puts into perspective the thing that I think we both love about a good Rochester, which is he just wants to provide for and mm-hmm. care for the people that he cares about. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, this idea that he could get a divorce, but he's like, if I just throw her back to the wolves, then she's going to be dead and it's going to be my fault. And mm-hmm. so I have to take care of her in this way. And so I think it is very sympathetic, which mm-hmm. I think is a very important thing for a Rochester. So that's
especially
why that was
this Rochester.
Yeah, this was the best Rochester moment for him, for me in the series. Everything else I was kind of like, eh, but I liked this a whole lot. Well, I think going back to what you had kind of touched on earlier is when you said, right, you hear that wouldn't be enough for her to leave. It's that great speech that Jane gives about how the way that he treats the women in his life is not acceptable. And mm-hmm. like you said too, it's like, that's what I kept attaching to about why I didn't like him, because mm-hmm. she brings up, she's like, you've been way too distant with your daughter. Like, you leave your entire company in the hands of Grace and you don't help her and you don't listen to her. You are so inappropriate with how you handled Blanche, who was a friend of yours. Like, you did this big mean thing to her. Like, he's so rude to her at the party. Mm-hmm. And like all these things of her to be like, I can't stay with you because of this. I can't respect myself and do that, which again, it's a great interpretation of this kind of more classical thing of her being mm-hmm. like, I can't go off and be a mistress. The rules of God and man, mm-hmm. and my own self-dignity. And here it's kind of more this whole, like, you need to learn to respect people, and I can't respect myself if I am with you and you haven't got that yet.
Yeah. It's the, I love you. Mm-hmm. But the way that you are behaving is all those criticisms that you brought up, Jane brings up. She's like, yeah. You are being immature. You are not treating your daughter with respect because mm-hmm. of, and his reasons for that are super sympathetic, right? Like, yeah. he has all of this guilt because of this situation with his wife, and he thinks he's failed her, and he thinks that he's not good enough, and he thinks all of these things. What a sympathetic thing to do. To do a little bit of an overshare, I have a father who has done a lot of things that are not okay. And come to find out as an adult, a lot of that is because he has his own issues. And so he thought showing up for me was going to do more damage than not. Mm-hmm. So deeply real the way yeah. that he's treating Adele. But she comes back at him and goes, this is not about what you're sharing with me right now. It's not even about the fact that you lied to me. I get it. You didn't really hurt me that badly, but the more, as you told this story, and as I look at our lives, you can't just treat me well. You have to yeah. treat everyone well.
Yeah.
You have to treat Grace well. You have to treat Blanche well. You have to treat your wife well. You have to find everybody in your life that you are failing and grow up and yeah. be an adult. And I have to too. I can't just fall into this space. Mm-hmm. And the acknowledgement that that's what she's doing,
yeah.
I think is such a powerful thing to be like, I was looking for a life. Mm-hmm. I was struggling with identity. I felt very, very alone. And I found this place, and specifically you, and felt, and her connection with Adele, I think, is also done incredibly in this program.
Yeah.
And she's like, I found this space. I found a place that I felt comfortable, and I ignored all of these red flags, and mm-hmm. I've got to go, and I have to create something for myself outside of this. And I think it's so well done.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Too real.
Yeah. No, that's
very well done.
Just from this conversation, just now. I think I might bump up my rating 1 point, but
I'm going to get 3 more.
Yeah, which is, I mean, like you mentioned, the actor who played Rochester, he left at the end of the production. So when we see him in the later episodes, it's off camera mostly. Like he's just kind of out of focus. I think they got a stand in for him. We don't hear him talk. And it's only through like Grace talking to Jane that we understand that he's worked on the criticisms that Jane gave him, which makes me think of in Pride and Prejudice when she tells him all the reasons she can't love him, and then he goes and he addresses all those things, and then she's like, oh my God, I'll be with you forever. But it's the same thing with Jane.
There's this YouTube channel that has been around for a while and is very, very popular, but I recently discovered, called Cinema Therapy. Have you ever watched any of their stuff? So it's basically this filmmaker and this therapist come together and they watch different movies and they talk about the kind of way characters live and how real that is to the way that humans experience certain things. And I watched them do Pride and Prejudice. If you're as big a Pride and Prejudice fan as me, go watch it. It's such a good like 20 minutes. When they talked specifically about that kind of arc for Darcy, right? Of him going back and fixing all of these things that she lays out for him as problems. They expressed something that I think is such a critical difference that is often misinterpreted, which is the idea of doing something because of someone and somewhat for them, but what your expectations are back for that person. So what this Rochester does in growing and all of these things, he does that because of Jane. He does that in some ways for Jane, but not to get her back. He's not doing it because he thinks Jane's going to come back and marry him at the end, or probably hopes that, right? Like Darcy definitely hopes that. And I think this Rochester definitely hopes that, but it's hoping for that versus expecting that.
Yeah.
So it's are you doing it because you're a nice guy who deserves the cookie of sex for being good?
Oh my God.
Or are you doing it because you are genuinely trying to grow as a person and this other person that you fell in love with is a catalyst for that change?
Right.
It's a distinction that is so incredibly important to me.
Yeah. And I think especially in romance.
Nailed it. I think they nailed it here.
Absolutely. All right, Lillian, I think we should kind of wrap up. Are there any last major things that you need to address before we talk about ratings?
The last major thing that I need to address, and then I do want to talk very, very quickly about a couple cast things. They spend, like we talked about, 8 hours. They spend a lot of time with the cousins and Aunt Reed. A lot of time with the Rivers, like a lot of time. Now, here's my thing with that is, I fully set that on the format, and they were pretending this was real time, right? So she has to be there for a month, and they release weekly episodes. So they have to find something to do for a week. I thought it was well done given the constraints of the format. It's tough to watch. The stuff with the cousins was genuinely hard to watch. The stuff with the Rivers, I really liked the sisters. I thought they were great actresses. I thought it was a really interesting way to do it. I liked them as characters. It's too much. I was watching it after trying to binge this and I was like, please make it stop. And that is nothing to do with the writing or the characters or even like they had to have it be that long. I get it.
No, I feel you. And I think we both confessed to each other that we did a little bit of skimming on those sections, but that's not.
I watched all the videos, just some of them I watched by going 5 seconds. Is there anything? What is the point of this video? Because they can't just show the parts that are interesting because she's supposed to be doing these video diaries. So it's like, there's this tiny little nugget of an interesting thing in this video and it's buried in this like dance lesson.
Yeah, totally. And I'm just like, okay, next. I don't need to see your cooking show with your cousin who you hate. stuff.
And I've watched web series before. I've like done other things like that. If I was watching this when it was coming out, I'd be thrilled for a 5-minute episode versus a 1-minute episode where they just get to the point. Yeah. But binging it was so hard to do.
No, I feel you. I totally feel you.
So the other thing that I want to talk about is, I'm sure a lot of this cast is out there doing stuff. Like we talked about, they started this production company. We're going to find out with Allison. And I believe that she also has a cool project that her co-producer was working on as well that she's going to tell us about. So we'll get those updates. But a couple of the other actors, Diana, one of the Rivers sisters, that mm-hmm. actress, her actual name is Elaine Shandley. She's in a bunch of things. You can go check out her IMDb, a couple Canadian TV shows. They're all Canadian, by the way. And then the actor who played Warren, Lucas Blandley. I have a lot of confidence
for, names. Anybody who wants to be a guest on our show, you'll have the rare privilege of Lillian struggling through your last name, maybe even your first name. If you donate now, Lillian will leave an answering machine message for all of your friends and family to hear you are struggling to say your name.
It's not just a struggle. It's also like, I care so much about saying it right. Like, it matters to me so much that I say it right that I panic. Xavier is an actor who is trans and has transitioned since this program or show or web series, whatever we want to call it. Their character, I'm going to refer to as she. They, I'm going to refer to as with they, he pronouns, because I found their social and it does not say what their preferred pronouns are. It does say they are trans. Mm-hmm. So the character was Susanna, who is a character that was made up for the show. And I was great comic relief. She was spectacular. She pretends to only speak Spanish to Grace, but then tells Jane that she does in fact speak English. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really funny. I really liked her as a character. And the actor, he is now in lots of different things. He's been in a bunch of stuff. So go check out Xander's IMDb to see all of the cool things that they're in. Very worth checking out. Anyway, awesome. that's the cast updates, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that stuff next week. But I think there's a lot here. If you're a big fan of Jane Eyre, I think you could probably skim this more and watch the highlights. You mm-hmm. absolutely can and might really enjoy watching the whole thing, but very worth dabbling in, especially I think our listeners have established that they're really big Jane Eyre fans. And I think really big Jane Eyre fans would enjoy this.
Yes, I think it's definitely worth seeing how this translates to a modern day setting, because I think that was the biggest kind of takeaway for me about this. It's like, wow, like you really, it's hard to like put this in a modern setting mm-hmm. and make it work the way that it does in a historical setting. And I think given, you know, what they had, they did a great job of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you ready to rate?
I think we are. I'm going to let you go first, Piper. What are you rating The Autobiography of Jane Eyre?
So I was originally going to give this a 5 out of 10, but because of that great conversation we had about the telling the truth scene and how well they adapted that, I'm actually going to raise it up to a 6 out of 10. And my rating is going to be a 6 out of 10 Tumblr accounts. Because this feels so Tumblr.
Oh God, absolutely. I also am raising my rating from previously what I had before our discussion, because I really think as I was talking through it, I realized how much I really loved this. And I really loved it. I think I'm always a big fan of adaptions that really approach this in their own way. And I think one of the things that I didn't really talk about, but I did note through this, is especially recently we've talked about a lot of how the different versions are really in conversation with each other as much as they are with the original text. Mm-hmm. And I noticed a lot of moments in this that were interpretations of the original text.
Yeah.
And I think this very different format, this very different way of approaching it, and given all the things that I know about it, probably grading on a curve here, but I really feel in my heart that it's an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
So I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 YouTube comments, which are usually bad. But in this case, go read the comment section. It adds so much value. We talk a lot about the Jane Eyre Files Facebook group, and mm-hmm. bizarrely timing wise, somebody just posted about this in there earlier this week, and they specifically said, "Oh, my comments are still there." And I like didn't, because it would be creepy.
Go
find
them
and like find what their comments are and stuff. But I sincerely like reading some of the comments helped me pick up on these like subtle references. Because if you only get 5 minutes every week and you're very, very into it, you're going to pick up on all these subtle references. So, 8 out of 10 YouTube comments from me.
Very nice. Awesome. Well, you guys, next week, we get to actually dive real deep on this. It's our first time talking with a creator of one of these adaptations. So what an honor and what an amazing privilege. Lillian, tell us a little bit more about what people can look forward to with next week's very first ever, like, official guest that isn't just my fiance that we wheeled out because we need content.
Yeah, which is how we generally refer to Sam. When he comes out at parties and stuff, we're always like, Sam, you got to come down. We need content.
We need content, Sam. Make us laugh.
Dance, funny boy, dance.
Love him.
We are going to be talking to Allison Hall. As we mentioned up top, she is the actress who played Jane. She is also a co-writer, co-producer of this project. So Allison co-created this with Nesta Arif. And so we're going to be talking to her about sort of what their creation project progress was like. One of the things that I'm most excited to ask her about is kind of what her feelings about it are looking back, because it has been almost 10 years and this was clearly a very personal project for her. So I'm very, very excited to kind of talk through what making this was like and why they made some of the choices that they made. So this is something we've been talking about doing for a while, is something Piper and I've been kind of having as our exciting secret coming up for almost a few months now. And I'm genuinely so excited to get to have this conversation next week and share it with all of you.
Yeah. And we would be also honored and excited if you guys would share your thoughts and reactions with us. And you can do that by reaching out to us via email. We are airbuds@gmail.com. You can also interact with us easily through social media @airbuds, spelled just like the name of the podcast. And we would also super duper appreciate it if you like what you hear. Maybe consider leaving a 5-star review and a comment, or sharing it out with your friends and family, because that helps get the show in front of other people. And then we just, you know, it's nice to be loved.
Yeah.
So
it makes our day. Exclusively for the love.
Yeah, that's why we do it. You love me.
Some people are like, I don't really care about the awards. I would die if we got an award.
An award from little old me. Nominate us for a podcast award show, please.
That would be great. So surprised.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's all that we have for you this week. So without further ado, you guys, thank you for joining us. Happy Jane Eyre reading and watching. Like, comment, subscribe. I feel like I have to say that for a YouTube version. So
I'm just on Twitter @
smash that like button. We'll see you guys later. Bye.